Welcome back to The Advisor. Please do not forget to like and subscribe. Meet my dear friend Dee, Deepak Parashar, an electrical engineer turned global energy executive who swapped megawatts for metaphysics without missing a beat. So, after 3 decades building power plants in 30 plus countries, a surprise blessing from His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and a chance encounter with an energy transmitting Vietnam veteran launched him on a 14-year, 38-country quest to decode the one universal current that runs through science, spirituality, nature, and you. So the Odyssey distilled in his 2024 book, Life, the Spiritual Essence, an engineer's insights into the integrated nature of the divinity. It's a techno-spiritual playbook that shows high-performing pros how to become spiritual billionaires in this crazy high stakes world. So from his 6 trigger points for daily alignment to a structural mashup of 5 world religions, Dee proves that rigorous data and divine wonder can not only coexist, they literally power each other. So today we're tapping into his unique lens to explore understanding the core principles of leadership. So he will unpack the inner wiring that separates positional power from soul level influence. And he's going to share stories from 3 global leaders who materially shaped the last century, revealing how their unseen spiritual circuitry drove very real world results. Oh my God, that's such a tongue tie. So grab your matcha, unmute your intuition, and help me welcome the man who lights up power grids by day and consciousness by night. Welcome to the show, Dee. I was so excited to see you this morning. You look amazing. You're so bright and shiny and loving. How are you doing?
Sunita, first of all, namaste to you, and big namaste to all our friends out there. I must thank you for this extraordinary introduction. It's going to take me a little bit to absorb it. So today we're going to speak about core principles of leadership, and I'm going to talk about 2 leaders actually, because I think that's more than enough, and then we can field any questions. But a little bit about myself, just to reiterate. So I'm an electrical engineer MBA. I'm very UK or British trained. I lived there for 10 years, and I then went on into the energy industry, leading several power initiatives at multiple points of the globe, and working with very, very dynamic teams in over 30 countries, cross-functional teams. So it was a very engaging work, 90 hours a week. Just flat out, 7 days a week, and that sort of rigor. Now, somewhere along the way, I came to write this techno-spiritual book called Life, the Spiritual Essence, which is specifically designed for the tier one global professional on how to strive to be the absolute best in all of their endeavors, both professional and personal. But it really starts from a personal space when you begin to understand the delta between the real me versus the perfect me. You see, everybody thinks, like when I speak to people, I think they're getting the perfect me, but in fact, they're getting the real me, and the delta is the fall of the ego. So once you begin to understand that and you're honest enough with yourself, you now begin to examine, and you have to introspect, and there are various methodologies of getting there. But what sparked this book, Life, the Spiritual Essence, was, it was due to a series of 3 events within a 6-month period commencing end of 2008. And that included running into His Holiness the Dalai Lama of Tibet on a flight to Tokyo. So I had a perfect
Amazing.
view of him for 11 hours. And in the morning he called me over and I got his blessings. And then subsequently I met him a second time. This is when I went up. I took my father and my son to meet him in at his official residence in North India. It
What
at
did it
the
feel like? I'm just curious. Sorry to interrupt you. What did it feel like being in his energy? Because I can only imagine when I look at photos of him, it's like I just get this like energy, this like beautiful light, like pure love.
Yeah, and you nailed it, Lisa, because the second time when I met him, he emerged from 60 feet away, and it was open air, and I could just feel his blast of energy, that pure love energy, just consuming me. I must tell you, I'd actually spent the previous couple of days in tears, just
Yeah,
at the thought,
I believe it. Yeah.
at the thought of meeting him. So anyway, continuing on, what happened was that that materially began to change my thinking, when I met him, and then I met the Vietnam veteran who was exhibiting, he was shooting powers from a distance, and that woke me up. The engineer in me came alive. So this then sparked a 14-year journey of research touching some 38 countries about an engineer's experiential analysis on divinity. What I said to myself was, is I'm not going to take anything to chance. And until and unless I haven't proven it to myself, I'm not going to put it into the, and at that time it was not a book, it was just a bunch of notes, but I just wanted to understand how everything, understood. Because when you see the energy of people like His Holiness, which is, Lisa, true leadership in action, this is where leadership and divinity are one. And so what happens is, when you're with the Lama, you don't need to speak, you have to sense, and that is just pure divinity. That is, I mean, how much they have achieved in their lives, and they blaze the pathway for us to follow. So as part of this intense research on this, on the experiential nature of divinity, I collaborated over the 14-year period with some, I would say, north of a 100+ leaders from myriad professions. And coming from industry and having led several power initiatives, this obviously naturally led into derivative studies on the core principles of leadership in as seen in the myriad professions. And all the while, this was being reinforced by clergy. So I actually ended up researching like 15 religions, but there's a structural analysis of the five major ones, which is a subset analysis within the book. And again, this was not meant to be a book at all. It was just a bunch of notes, but it was the extraordinary, enhancement and grace and help received and encouragement from my colleagues at General Electric that I finally decided to, start to put this book together. So, I examined these principles, in myriad industries like defense, industry, arts and entertainment, the space program, and other, fields. And a lot of these leaders came forward, and they actually gave me inputs for the book, but that's so what I'm going to do today is I'm going to speak about two such leaders that I dealt with, and each of them have materially influenced events of the past century. And but before I do that, I want to just commence from scriptures, okay? Because this is, this is, since it's all integrated. So bear with me, Lisa, while I just read a couple of points about our tier one religious leaders across, the multiple beliefs. So
Please, yes, please.
if you look at Jesus Christ, starting from Christianity, he was revered for compassion, love and joy, servanthood. You'll hear that term in industry, servanthood. There are servant leaders
Yeah.
out there, right? Humility, truthfulness, forgiving. These are just some. If you look at Prophet Muhammad from Islam, he was perseverance and patience, humility, there it is again, justice and fairness, and leading by example. Keep that in the back of your mind. The Buddha had, they had what you call the 10 perfections, but including wisdom, energy, patience, determination, loving kindness, and equanimity. And then you had Lord Krishna from Hinduism. He was revered as the warrior diplomat. He was the godchild. He was the prankster. He was the guru. He was also the universal supreme being, leading people out of cosmic delusion, or what we call confusion of the soul. So this is what I was reading in the scriptures while I was also, dealing with all these multiple leaders to see how this all kind of flowed together, right? Because everything comes from a certain source. So
Yes.
all these thoughts, now I'm not going to keep this in the back of your mind. So I'm going to now speak about the two leaders that I dealt with. Do you have any questions for me, Lisa? Well, once I get going, there's no stopping.
I can feel your passion, and I can just only imagine the power in what you're about to say, because I know you. We got to know each other very quickly by recognition. And your brain, I can just picture it pulling all of this information apart and organizing it. And so I am so excited. I just want to hear about it. Tell us, tell us.
Okay, thank you for that. By the way, Lisa, before we go any further, I must warn you, you're not allowed to praise me because if you do, what you can't see is I've chained my feet down because I start to inflate. And as I self-inflate, I'm going to go off screen. So you're not allowed to praise me in the slightest, please, right?
Hey,
Because.
your ego, settle down over there, ego, settle
Okay,
down.
so the first leader was Nuremberg World War II prosecutor Benjamin Ferenc. And the backstory on this is that it was in 2019, I came across a program on him on Netflix, and it was called Prosecuting Evil, The Ben Ferenc Story. And I'd never heard about Mr. Ferenc before. So as I'm sitting there and just listening to this man expound his life experiences, where he traveled, and are just an enormous achievements. I'm sitting there open mouth because the principles of excellence and leadership that he was talking about was substantively integrated into the first part of my book, which is the holistic six triggers. In fact, our last podcast that I did with Stacy was on the six trigger points, right? And there was an article on Huffington Thrive Global after that. But the six trigger points is basically a one-page holistic chart designed to achieve excellence. And what it is, Lisa, it's 25 points of action segregated into six quadrants of the mind, which I'd come up with, during all the research that I was conducting. And here was this man just expounding it. And I could see, I mean, I said, what is this? I mean, how could somebody do that? Because Lisa, it took me, to give you scale, it took me 7 years to develop that table, to grow it, piece by piece, into the 25 sub triggers. And I would tweak words as I would meet a leader, and I'd fit it in, and then I'd test it and retest it every day. And here he is
Man.
just expounding it, right? And at that point, I said, I gotta reach out to him, because
Yeah, totally.
it took me 7 years to develop it, and then 7 years to test, retest, refine, right? And now it's my daily grounding chart.
It
I do
felt
it for.
ready. You felt ready. Yeah, that's so crazy.
So being utterly rambunctious by nature, I said, I'm going to go reach out to him, right? Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret, Lisa. What happens is when you have people of this level and this level of achievements and how they dedicated their entire lives for community, they're rather hard to find. Try it. It's not easy,
They're hard to
right?
get it. They're hard to tie down. Yeah, they're hard to track down.
They're hard.
Totally.
So I tried for 2 days online. And I think I made a couple of calls. I found he had a foundation, and I'm doing a lot of this stuff and just sending it out. And 2 days later, the phone rings, and it's him.
Wow. God.
Now, let's just take a step back and try and imagine what I was going through at that moment, because you see, Lisa, this is not some corporate leader calling me to say, "Hey, Deepak, I heard about we've got a major issue ongoing. I know you're on top of it. Can you give me the 30-second elevator speech? Define the issue, the problem. What are your suggested actions, the recommended action? What does your team think? Do you need any help from me? What are the risks? And how do we get through this?" It wasn't that. This is the last surviving prosecutor of the Nuremberg World War II trials on the other end of the line. Here's a man, Lisa, who went through the Normandy landings, right? He crossed the Maginot Line. He went into the concentration camps as they were being liberated to collect evidence on behalf of the Allies. And Mr. Ferenc was telling me how he saw guards being flung into the ovens alive, right? By prisoners, but as act of revenge. I mean, this is what he was going through, right? And I tell you, Lisa, this is where holistic preparation meets opportunity. And what I mean by that is, I could have freaked, right? There's one or two things I could have done. And just, when you pick up the phone and it's Mr. Ferenc, I could have either freaked or I could have been able to just adjust and move. And that's where holistic preparation meets opportunity, because what transpired was possibly the single greatest discussion I've had in my life. And it went on for a full hour. You see, it could have gone for 10 minutes. He would have been extraordinarily nice, and that would have been the end of it. But I was ready. And this is, you hear about books like Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, right? Where they say live in the moment. But this is living in the moment with all your cylinders firing at the same time. You were able to adjust and dance. And Mr. Ferenc then went on, just to finish his story, he went on into a life of jurisprudence, which lasted 70 years. He materially influenced the creation of the International Court of Criminal Justice at The Hague. And he had tried, he gave me chapter and verse on his strategy, how he tried Dr. Otto Ohlendorf, who was the head of the Einsatzgruppen, and these were the death squads that went alongside the regular German army, murdering innocent women and children. And he told me how his visits into the camps translated into a life committed for a higher cause. So there were three takeaways, right, that I saw about him. First was his humility, right, which is a given, because this legend of a man called a nobody like me, right? Because and Lisa, you recall I had sent you a picture of when I was standing in front of that big supercell. That's when you realize just how minuscule you are compared to the larger scheme of things. And that's how you learn to contain, your ego. So first of all was his humility, right? The second was his humor. He had that impish, self-effacing, humor. He was interviewed on 60 Minutes, and I believe it was Leslie Stahl, if I'm not mistaken. And she asked him. She says, "You're one of the sunniest people I've met in my life, notwithstanding all the, what you have seen, by way of your World War II experiences and subsequently." And she also mentioned that he was a very tiny person. He was, I think, just about 5 feet is what she mentioned. So coming back to his humor, he told me, he says, "Deepak, when World War II began, I kept applying and I kept getting rejected by everyone, because of my stature." He says, "I was furious." So he says, he says, for example, when I applied to the U.S. Airborne, he said they rejected me on the basis because they said, "I'll never land. You would just go up once he jumped out of the plane." So he had that kind of humor, going with him. And then ultimately, during the discussion, I asked him, I said, "Sir, what are your thoughts on material gains? How do you weigh that?" And he said, "Oh, I've donated all my savings." And he said, "You got to think about this, right? Because, life is all about understanding your and transcending your boundaries of fear progressively. Because when you face your fears head on, you will find that the majority of them are so transitory that they just diminish. They start to like just crumble in front of your eyes, because now you're totally focused, on fixing the problem. And you now you this is where you live in the moment, and you truly just keep going. But look at what he was able to do. I don't have the courage today. Maybe one day I will, right? But not today."
That literally brought a tear. My eyes got a little leaky there. I cannot even imagine how he just lives on in faith and love and complete gratitude and humility. Like that is how he lives. And that is only how I could only strive to be one day.
Yeah, he passed away 2 years back at the age of 103.
Crazy.
At the age of 98, he had a 16-hour a day routine.
Jeez.
I mean, this is the person you're
You
talking
thought
to.
my 2 hour routine was long.
But these are that's the person I was speaking with, right? And I must have done something karmically right in my life to be able to, receive these blessings. A sidebar on that is that The blessings of elders are so important for us. They have done so much for us. You'll always find people who are a mentor or who looked after you, came to you in times of trouble, and it is our duty to serve them in their time of need. It's and you and I always, keep that in the back of my mind. So that was my experience with Benjamin Ferenc.
Crazy. I'm like, I'm so, my ego is so jealous right now. But that makes sense to me because I'm looking over your stuff and I'm looking over your website and I'm looking into the book, and that makes sense to me, how you got the information you did and how you started to develop these core principles. Those were key moments that helped you develop this brilliance that you've now shared with the world.
Well, you're too kind. Again, Lisa, you're not allowed to praise me, right? Remember, because I begin to inflate, like I
Settle
started.
down, D, settle down.
So the next leader I want to speak about is Colonel James Harvey, the third of the Tuskegee Airmen. Now, a little background for you. So the Tuskegee Airmen, they were the first African American World War II fighter squadron. And they were trained at a base called the Tuskegee, where they went through some extreme challenges, to pass, to graduate, because the bar was set much higher for these pilots. In fact, there was a movie called The Tuskegee Airmen with Lawrence Fishburne and Michael Jamal Warner. He just passed away recently, the actor, and also with Cuba Gooding Jr. And that's when I first, come across the Tuskegee. I was fascinated by the whole story. Now, as I was continuing my research, on divinity and spirituality and engineering and metaphysics and all of this, is all starting to come together, I came across a quotation by a Colonel Alex Jefferson of the Tuskegee, where he said that in life, you win some, you lose some, but you make progress. And I love that quote. And so, Lisa, I had stuck it somewhere. I think it was in the preface section. Now, when I finally got serious about integrating the book, this was actually during the I'd started integrating it during the COVID period. And then it took me, but I'd already started getting permissions for use of pictures and quotations. And it took me a cumulative 3 years going around the globe getting, because there were probably somewhere between 80 to 100 permissions. I have a dossier this thick, of all. Now, I could not find Colonel Jefferson. And in fact, I think at the time there were only five left of these Tuskegee Airmen, right? And I couldn't find him. So, and I still remember this. It was September of 2021. And very regretfully, I took the quote out of the book. And 2 weeks later, Lisa, I'd gone to DC for some client meetings. I'm sitting down in the lobby of the hotel. I was waiting for my two colleagues from General Electric to join me. And down in the reception, there were a lot of other sofas, which were nobody was sitting there. It was just myself, sitting. And these four people came in, one in a wheelchair, and for some reason unknown to me, they came up to me and said, "Can we sit with you?" And I said, "Sure, yeah, no problem." And so
I know where this is going.
I noticed the gentleman in the wheelchair, and naturally I got up to help him, get him out of the wheelchair. As I'm picking, helping him up, I now start to see his gear, right? He had the 1949 Top Gun, the P-51,
Yeah,
the
I can
300
picture it.
fighter squadron, and I was frozen. I turned and it was his daughter, Kathy. And I said, "Is he?" And she said, "Yes, he's a Tuskegee Airman." And it turned out to be Colonel, not Colonel Alex Jefferson, but, James Harvey, of the Tuskegee. And someday, Lisa, I'm going to sit down and try and work the probability, the linked probability, because of all the things that I tried to finally giving up and here. Is one of the
And
last five.
because you finally surrendered, you finally surrendered. It seems the universe gives us what we are manifesting when we finally surrender. I think it was, in my interpretation, it was your body saying, "I'm ready, because I don't need this anymore."
Yeah, I, you know, and I, but what it did prove to me is that And this really was a subconscious manifestation of some sort that came on. Because the mind, the clearer you become, or the simpler you become, the lesser, once your ego begins to drop, you can project energy, much more clearly, and somehow these, energetic connections begin to align themselves. And now you can call it a coincidence if you want, but I one day I'll sit down, maybe I'll go into ChatGPT and try the probability of it to see. But regardless to say, it was one of the single greatest evenings that we spent with Colonel Harvey, and my colleagues joined in, and we just had a party listening to the life of this great legend. He went on to do 126 missions in Korea, and his message to us was, and my colleague Alba Muller, she was saying later, she says, "D, I was getting goosebumps listening to him." Because he said that always strive to be the best despite the odds. And for him,
That's beautiful.
a problem was no problem. It was just something to be worked through. And look at the simplicity. He had what I wrote about in the six trigger point section called the dynamic quietude, where you take your great knowledge acquired. I mean, this is a man who flew 13 different types of aircraft, right? And you take this great knowledge acquired, and you clear out all the weed and the fluff to be able to operate in the most efficient manner. And that's what he did. So when I look at his quality, and he also said, he says, "Deepak, I have always believed in a good belly full of laugh every day." There it is, humor, right? And
That's
humor
how I
is.
clear at the end of my day. I watch really funny videos and I feel like it grounds me. But I feel like in his case, and in many people who are enlightened and have transcended that, they release all of the crap, the energy that's built up inside, and then they're able to see a problem as it is, as just another part of the journey. So many of us, a problem arises and our insecurities and all the things from the outside pop up in our bodies, and then it freezes us. So when we get that, when we release that, then we have the ability to see it how it is. And wow, what a powerful man.
Unbelievable and humble to the core. And this I never asked him what his religious beliefs were. I didn't have to. This is just pure divinity in action, ongoing. And he was detached yet so loving, So so to summarize, and sorry for the lengthy, but I had to expound, what both these leaders were about. The first point that comes across is that they both led from the front, right? Led from the front. You see, what happens is in life, as a leader, if you want to lead, don't talk too much, right? This is you have to do. But the three key takeaways, and this is part of my integrated studies across the myriad professions, I found three that are very common. Leading from the front, of course, and then these three. One is humility, humor, and dedicating your life for something much larger than yourself. You see, because when the greatest leaders are those who rise above their domain of expertise and give themselves, they go from the I into the we to help others in life. And that's
That's
my
beautiful.
That's my story on the two of them.
Wow, that is just, I almost have no words. How powerful is that? Like to be able to learn from two icons who've been there, done that, who hold that energy. We've all walked in a room where there's been somebody that you're just incredibly drawn to, and they don't say a word. They're just standing there, and you can feel their sacredness, you can feel their knowing, and it almost scares the crap out of me. Like those people are just so powerful. And I love how you highlight what true leadership is, because you and I could sit here and talk about what true leadership isn't, but I'd rather not even bring in that aspect of it, because I love how you highlighted what true leadership is. It's exactly what you said. It's leading with love. It's standing in your power, having no ego, but genuinely wanting to help the greater good and holding that in your heart space.
Yeah.
That is true leadership.
Yeah, and you know the to add to what you said, it's also I you know if you can find a mentor or a guru that leads you into yourself and not to them, you're very fortunate. And that's what these great leaders embellish, right? They don't expect anything. I must tell you a very funny story. So, one of the premier swamis in India who oversaw my entire book strategy for the past 10 years. You know, I'd show up 4 times a year and I'd present my charts to him, you know, and he would just like pick out mistakes and he said, this is good, add that, use this word. And all of a sudden, you know, this began to come together. So I'm gonna tell you a very funny story. I met him a couple of years back in Delhi, and I was telling him, I said, sir, you know, I'm so, you know, I despite all my research, I got so many vices still, and you know, I'm confused, and you know, and I said, you know, I got vices. For example, I'm still a non-vegetarian, right? And he said, no problem, just keep eating. I'm like, what did you just say, sir? No, just keep eating. He says, you know, the day that you begin to feel sorry for the animal kingdom, he says, you will naturally stop. And what he was really saying, Lisa, was that this is the delta between the suppression of a desire versus a natural progression of the mind. And he was talking that he come out of yourself, you know, find the leader in you, find your pathway. That's really what he was saying. And I made the leap a few months back. I was actually feeding a cow and I saw the gentleness in its eyes, you know? And something just hit me, a lifelong non-vegetarian turn vegetarian like that. But
Oh
then
my God.
again, it was years of thought, Lisa. It has to percolate. You know, as Michael Jackson always said, let it simmer. You know, let
Let
it
it
simmer.
simmer.
And but you know, these are, you know, these leaders, they've blazed a pathway for us. Like, for example, when you look at His Holiness the Dalai Lama of Tibet, you see their training. First of all, he hides his knowledge through his humor. He's very bubbly. You know, he's always, if you watch something, he's always, you know, he's laughing. What you don't know is that these sages, they can see you in at various points of your life, all together as one. So they can tell instinctively that how to tap into you. They make these minuscule adjustments into you, and off you go. I mean,
Crazy.
gives me goosebumps just, you know, just thinking about it. But you know, to like the Swami that I was telling you about, he has researched over 100,000 verses of Sanskrit. You know, he linked into the rhythms of creation. You know, they can draw into that divinity. But you talk to them, they are absolutely humble, you know, and they're research Swamis. They stay away from the public eye. They don't want to be found. But if you can find them, it's just such a journey. So you know, as part of this extraordinary journey, I mean, I'm beginning to run into all these people.
Incredible.
And so hence I just had to put the book out, you know, and I'm doing everything for charity because I don't have the slightest interest in any gains of any sort. And that's my story.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. So, where can people find your book?
So it's out on Amazon and on multiple platforms. There's you know, Barnes and Noble, and I put it on all the both in e-versions and also the print versions.
Okay, beautiful. What is some last minute? Do you have any last minute thoughts before we say goodbye for the day?
Yeah. So first of all, take the time to find yourself. You know, there's a leader lurking within you somewhere, right? And this is particular for the younger generation, right? You may be multi-talented, but pick your top one or two skill sets and then run with them. Because I've met so many people in my travels across what 45, 50 countries who are so multi-talented, but they never devote enough time. They cannot devote enough time to, you know, each of their skill sets. And as a consequence, they get very frustrated because they're not able to achieve what, you know, what they want to do. So pick one or two skill sets. Understand that within each of or each one of us, like the leader, so for example, there, you know, there are may so many forms of leadership. You know, you can lead to be a fireman, you can lead to be a public speaker, you can lead to be Some people have the courage to go defend others. Some end up being corporate leaders, right? So experiment and find who you are, and couple that with a humility and a gratefulness for what you have, and you will find, and but also try and develop your situational awareness. And if you can combine these factors, that alone, right, the universe will open up some very, very interesting corridors of knowledge for you.
Thank you so much for being here today and for sharing your knowledge and your stories. It was absolutely beautiful.
Well, thank you once again for having me, Lisa. Really, it's an honor, and once again, a big, big namaste to all our friends out there. There is so much hope for you. There's so much divinity within each one of you. Just go tap into it and you'll see wonders. Namaste.
To our audience, you just heard from Dee. Listen to his words and then go back and listen again because he just said some very, very important things. Let's blaze the way with humility and with love and with light. Bye for now, Advisor family.